This is me telling you this. The program is Media Network.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another program from the Media Network Vintage Radio Archive.
Serving Hilversum, Huizen, Loosdrecht, Almere, Baarn and Lelystad on 88.1 and 87.6 megahertz via the cable network, oh, and around the world on shortwave, this is the Dutch International Service. Media Network, a weekly communication survey from Radio Netherlands, this time on the train.
Yes, we are on the train this week in the process of heading back to Holland after a few days' research in Britain, rather in the news today. We've taken the train because of the uncertain schedules of the airlines in the past few days, and what better way to while away the hours on a slow diesel but take a portable recorder, a microphone and a pair of headphones out and convert the fairly quiet corner of a second-class carriage into a shortwave radio studio. Ignoring the strange looks that people at the other end of the compartment are giving me, let's start with a follow-up. Last week we mentioned that a mixture of BBC One and Two was now on the communication satellite Intelsat 5, feeding television pictures from London to Copenhagen. We dropped into the home of the BBC External Services this week, though, and asked Peter Udell, controller of European Services, whether there are any plans for feeding external radio broadcasts via satellite to Europe.
Not any plans. We, in fact, started off at exactly the same time as the television with two streams, two radio streams. One of pure world service, 8 hours from early afternoon to late evening, and the other a succession of language programmes, different language programmes, again feeding to the Danish cable company.
So you're feeding the radio programmes basically to cable companies as opposed to individuals?
This particular launch is on the back of the television of two audio streams being fed to the Danish cable company. At the same time, the cable company has made it possible for us to enable any other cable company in Europe and local radio stations throughout the footprint to downlink and use this material, either the World Service or any of the language broadcasts they wish.
The BBC has been using the Intelsat system to feed its relay stations overseas for some time. Just a couple of weeks ago, the satellite link to their relay station in Lesotho was completed. But this type of feed is digitally encoded and not easy to descramble without expensive equipment. Listening to the new and still experimental BBC service to European cable systems on Intelsat is easier, but still requires a dish and receiver that's beyond the budget of most individuals. Still, for the record, the new service is on the Intelsat 5 satellite, 27.5 degrees west, transponder 63, the centre frequency being 11.175 gigahertz.
This is London.
Content is exactly the same as we are broadcasting normally. The World Service is exactly the same throughout this 8-hour period as the normal World Service on shortwave or medium wave. With the languages, again, this is simply what we are broadcasting at the same time on, again, either shortwave or medium wave. But obviously, what a cable company would be interested in is a solid stream throughout these 8 hours, which is what we're offering. What a local radio station could well be interested in is, for example, a specific World Service programme like News Desk or 24 Hours, or a specific language transmission like French, half an hour French, or half an hour German, or half an hour Finnish, or whatever. What we can do is to supply Northern France, for example, with 648 on perfectly reasonable medium wave quality. What we will be able to do with this satellite stream is to make available in other parts of France a hugely better signal than the shortwave signal they can get now, in the same way in Germany.
as the footprint of Intelsat 5 reaching all the audiences that you want to?
What it is reaching is, for example, from Portugal in the west, which could be a very major audience for our Portuguese service, to Finland in the northeast, and again a very major possibility for us. What it does not cover is southern France. It doesn't cover Switzerland, Austria, the Balkans, for example. And what we are seeking at the moment is a way of perhaps adding to our Intelsat coverage with a footprint covering other parts of Europe. And for this, the obvious candidate is Eutelsat Spot West. What we're trying to do is seeking a way of getting onto Eutelsat, both for a stream of world service and for a language stream, and that both of these should be 24 hours. That's our objective, as a complement to what we're already doing as of last Thursday on Intelsat.
The language lineups of Finnish, Arabic, Polish, German, and so on are still subject to change. Press reports a week ago today said that Super Channel, BBC External Services, and the Virgin Record Group were planning to broadcast some of the BBC External Services programmes, plus a new stereo pop channel right across Europe, riding piggyback using spare capacity on the existing Super Channel TV network. Well, how much money changes hands was said to be the stumbling block at the moment. Certainly it's a bit early to say whether these press reports will actually turn into reality. But are there any plans to scramble the service?
A lot of television stations, as you know as well as I do, are concerned that it's only authorised people should be able to receive this. We are keen that anybody who wishes to receive what the BBC is broadcasting should do so. The last thing that we want to do is to have it scrambled so that not only cable stations, not only local radio stations can take advantage of it, but if there are individuals around the footprint who have got the equipment, the downlinking equipment, that they will be able to receive on studio quality the output of the BBC in just the same way as the professional operators can receive it.
But presumably local stations will have to credit the BBCs, otherwise they're getting a free programme that they can cut together and do what they like with it without crediting the source.
Absolutely fine, but our experience throughout Europe is that when stations have taken our material live off air, they have credited us. When they've taken our material and rebroadcast bits of it later, they've credited us as well.
Shortwave broadcasting, though, still has a lot of life in it yet. The BBC Monitoring Service reported last week that during the recent Costa Rican presidential delegation's visit to Spain, an agreement was signed by the foreign ministers of both countries to establish Radio Internacional de Costa Rica. The Spanish equipment will be used to relay Spanish foreign radio's programmes to Central and South America, as well as broadcasting its own programmes. Meanwhile, in Britain, shortwave has certainly been in the news this past week. Philips and the Dixon chain of consumer electronic shops have suddenly launched a Get Into Shortwave campaign at 60 of their retail outlets around the country. Publicity brochures have been printed up by the BBC. This week's Economist magazine carried an interesting, though slightly inaccurate, story about jamming and the overcrowding of the airwaves. Contrary to the article, jamming of Voice of America by Soviet jammers hasn't ceased altogether. And Sony has reworked Tony Hancock's famous radio ham sketch to promote their new ICF 7600DA shortwave receiver. Unfortunately, the advert gives the impression that you'll be able to pick up Radio New Zealand or the Kenyan Top 40 at the push of the set's buttons. I'd like to see them pick up the stations that the advert actually claims.
Radio Netherlands. We're not number one. You are.
Well, sitting next to me on the boat train to Harwich, Hook of Holland, is Andy Sennett, who's been to the seaside, I believe, Andy.
Yes, I've just been down to Britain's south coast to visit the 1987 CableSat exhibition, billed as a major event in the cable and satellite TV industry. It was held in Brighton, once England's premier holiday resort. Sadly, though, I was badly disappointed.
What was wrong then? Was it raining?
Yes, you're right, it was, but that was a minor disappointment compared to the event itself.
The CableSat's a big exhibition with lots to see, isn't it?
Well, it used to be, which is why I was so disappointed. You see, it turns out that a new rival event in London was held in March and completely upstaged this one. You see, the industry is still small in terms of the number of people involved, and there just isn't a big enough demand for more than one annual event. Of course, most people wanted to try the new event at Wembley and saw no reason to repeat the exercise again in June, because it would just be the same people turning up.
But wasn't there anything at all which made an impression on you?
Well, it was really a case of who wasn't there. Not a single programme company, such as Sky Channel or Super Channel, virtually nothing you could take away and read, whereas last year I came back with a whole load of literature. But there was one point I did notice, and that is the rapid development of data services.
What do you mean by that exactly? Is that something like the teletext that we have in Europe?
Yes, exactly. The spread of teletext has been faster in some countries than others, but that has partly depended on the quality and range of data offered by the domestic stations. But now satellite services are carrying data of interest to viewers who want a broader perspective. Some domestic services, for example, are very poor at looking beyond their own national borders. The news agency Reuters were displaying their comprehensive news and current affairs service, currently being sold to cable TV operators, but there's no reason why a satellite programme channel shouldn't offer such a service over the air, and in fact some already do.
What else is new?
Well, there's one other thing I found interesting, and it really is brand new. There's a company called Interplan, which is basically acting as a consultant and supplier to locally based cable TV services. And now they've come up with a customised service that enables the individual operator to have local advertising, captions and logos automatically inserted into the output of a regular channel. So, in effect, you get something like a local TV station in the United States, which has network programmes interspersed with local advertising. The benefit to the cable operator is that he doesn't have the expense of purchasing his own computer and developing the software to make this happen.
So what's your overall impression of the state of the satellite and cable TV industry based on this event?
Well, you see, that's just the point. If I didn't know better, I'd say that the small size of the exhibition and the list of absentees would suggest a dying industry. And yet a closer look shows that there is a lot of creative energy and talent around. And it's just a pity that people who couldn't attend the Brighton event missed seeing a lot more of this energy and talent. And that next year I'll think twice about going.
All right. Well, today, of course, is election day in the United Kingdom, and most of the domestic radio services will be on the air much later than usual. That includes BBC's Radio 4, which means that listeners in Europe who normally receive the World Service on 200 kHz long wave will find domestic programming instead, up until about 03 hours UTC. And I understand from the bulletin boards in North America that 200 kHz is in fact getting across the Atlantic at the moment. Listeners who want to identify local BBC and commercial stations on medium wave will find that tonight may prove a rare opportunity. Whichever political party forms the next British government, changes can be expected in the structure of the radio system. Perhaps in anticipation of this, the BBC is currently experiencing major alterations to its management structure, which will certainly affect programming by later in the year. But there's another way in which the picture of broadcasting in this part of the world may soon be changed. It too depends on the actions of the British government, but was almost lost in a sea of last-minute legislation prior to the dissolution of Parliament just over a month ago. Actually, that's in fact a pun, because it concerns a bill to extend Britain's territorial waters from a current limit of 3 miles to 12 miles. Andy.
Yes, Jonathan, the bill has received royal assent. That is to say, the Queen has signed her agreement for it to become law. Now, how quickly this will be done will, of course, depend on the priorities of the next government. But as Media Network correspondent Barry Collins has pointed out, the implications are serious for offshore radio stations such as Radio Caroline. The current law prohibits broadcasting without a licence from a ship or structure within British territorial waters. The present 3 mile limit means that Radio Caroline has been able to use an anchorage in the Knockdeep Channel, a sheltered part of the North Sea, without breaking this particular law. The 1987 Territorial Sea Bill, if enacted, will necessitate Radio Caroline moving to a much less sheltered position outside the new 12 mile limit. And in fact, yesterday evening, the station announced that it has just moved, so clearly they're not taking any chances. Radio Caroline's erstwhile neighbour, Laser Hot Hits, has been off the air for several months now, and her future is uncertain. But we understand that Laser's ship, the Communicator, has already left its previous anchorage close to Radio Caroline. but whether this has anything to do with the territorial sea bill is open to speculation. Well, one person who will be watching developments very closely is Roy Bates, self-styled Prince of the Principality of Sealand, an old wartime gun tower 6 miles off the British coast. As previously reported on Media Network, Mr. Bates plans several radio stations to operate from Sealand, and unlike those with a ship, he can't simply move another 6 or 7 miles further out.
In fact, Andy, the latest story this past Sunday in the press was that Mr. Bates has got backing from Wallace Kemper of Ewing Oil Incorporated, interesting name, of Dallas, Texas, USA, to start a television service from Sealand. Reports say that a 1,000-foot mast is to be built onto the concrete structure in time to broadcast programmes before the end of this year. But, of course, this isn't the first time we've heard claims that broadcasting services will start on this rather isolated chunk of concrete just outside the Thames estuary. Right, Annie, you've done your bit. Take this cup of railway coffee. Or is it tea? I'm not sure. Well, I'll wake you up the next item on this portable recorder here.
Media Network. Election Free Radio.
Back in February, the British government published a consultative document on the future of British broadcasting. It suggested the setting up of 3 new commercial radio networks, plus the introduction of community radio. Now that those affected have had time to digest what's been proposed, it would appear that not everyone is pleased about the contents of the so-called Green Paper. Both the BBC and the independent stations now appear to be trying to slow down the pace of changes put forward in the report, should they ever become law. Since only 3 of the 4 national BBC radio networks are available on VHF FM at any one time, the BBC is reluctant to give up any existing frequencies for new services until the problems are solved in the 1990s. Roger Tidy asked the chairman of the Community Radio Association, Bevan Jones, for his reaction to the Green Paper.
There are some very, very positive things in it, although there are some rather strange things in it. The idea of 3 commercial national radio channels, I think, took everyone by surprise because no one's got the faintest idea what they'll broadcast and where the money will come from. But alongside that, the Green Paper did recognise the strength of the demand for community radio, although it did rather muddle it up with the demands for small business radio, which are entirely different in kind. And the logic of their case will mean that if you simply go for the small business deregulatory model, you get 100 stations all playing exactly the same top 40 playlist. To prevent that happening, you've got to have a mechanism in the licensing process which does single out those people who genuinely want to do something that isn't being done already. I think overall my feeling is that we've got national radio, we've got commercial pop radio, we haven't got community radio in Britain, and that's what should take priority when the Green Paper comes to be implemented after legislation.
There was a suggestion the government were worried over possible left-wing bias in some of the stations. Is that true?
I think the honest way to say is that the government was disappointed at the lack of right-wing bias in the stations. The very nature of community radio, in fact, as we know from around the country, is that it tends to be politically neutral. It may allow an element of pamphleteering in exactly the same way that Channel 4 does. But the whole point of community radio is that licences go to those groups who have the broadest range of community support.
Is there really a public demand, though, for community radio?
There's a huge public demand for community radio. Thousands of people were involved in putting in applications for that experiment. The Community Radio Association sees its membership growing quite regularly, despite all the setbacks, despite the fact that we don't even have community radio yet. I'm absolutely convinced that that's the development which most people would want to see.
Some pirates closed down some months back in anticipation of community radio licences, which the Conservative government decided not to grant at the last moment. Radio Jackie, until then a profitable but illegal operation serving southwest London on medium wave, has remained off the air since the Green Paper was published. Peter Streams is their spokesman, and we asked him if he felt local community radio needed any legislation.
I think there has to be some regulation. We've always advocated a light touch, and those are the actual words that he used in the Green Paper. The only regulation is the regulation that I think is important, that is over the actual allocation of frequency and power used on that frequency, and to be impartial politically in terms of news coverage. But everything else is left to the station. They're responsible for looking after their own transmitters, for employing as many or as few staff as they wish and putting out the programming that they think is appropriate. All that is left in the hands of the station, and that's the way we think it should be.
Others, though, like FM pirate station JBC, serving primarily the Jamaican community in London, continue to broadcast. Their spokesman, who simply calls himself Challenger, isn't very hopeful that they'll ever get a licence.
We went through a lot of trouble, get all our papers right, and we sent it off. Well, they didn't even send it off. We take it direct there. We pay a cab to send somebody from the station down there to sign for it, and it was agreed that we will have a license, but we did not obtain a license. Now, this green paper comes out and said, well, they're going to give a lot of community station. Maybe that's, you know, like putting your line in the river and pulls up nothing.
Voice of the Mali call, Trinity, Muhammad Ali, JBC Radio 105, I'm telling you.
Roots, rocka, reggae.
JBC.
It's really amazing what you can find on the FM dial in London at the moment. Now, Andy, let's bring you back into the programme. You've been looking through the Sunday newspaper.
Yes, I just finished this coffee as well. It wasn't as bad as you said, Jonathan. Yes, I just noticed in the Sunday Times that within 2 years, the Caribbean could have a new nation. The newspaper says that the governments of 7 small microstates have agreed in principle to forming a federation, and the plan will go ahead if the people of the 7 microstates give their consent in a referendum later this year. The plan involves St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenada, Dominica, Antigua, St. Kitts and Montserrat, with a combined population of about 600,000. If the federation goes ahead, each island would retain its own national government, but there would also be a new federal parliament, flag and national anthem. Now, the Sunday Times doesn't mention any plans for the media, but it seems to me very likely that provision will have to be made for some form of national broadcasting service. In the 1960s, the Windward Islands Broadcasting Service used shortwave transmitters based on Grenada, but those were put out of action when the American forces entered Grenada 4 years ago. The most powerful medium-wave transmitter in the group would be on Montserrat, where Radio Antilles runs 135 kilowatts, and they've got a relay station on St. Vincent as well. But this station is privately operated.
Well, a BBC monitoring service report published today notes a statement on domestic radio in Haiti. On the 2nd of June, leaders of the Unified Party of Haitian Communists held a press conference and announced that they were going to start a radio station, calling it Radio Truth. The Haitian report suggests that the new station may be on shortwave, but no frequencies are given. The organisers want the radio to begin broadcasting before the presidential elections there. And talking of clandestines, Voice of the Iraqi People has been noted by the BBC on a new out-of-band frequency of 4029 kHz. 4029, starting at 1520 UTC for 40 minutes. The broadcasts support the Iraqi Communist Party. And finally, we've solved the mystery about the supposed new service on FM from North Sea music ship Radio Caroline. Actually, we're approaching the coast now, and we can't hear a thing on the FM radio in the train. It appears that reception of the station in the London area last week was thanks to a relay from a land-based pirate station, LWR.
Media Networks Book Review.
There, you put down my coffee, and we switch now to a publication from the Danish Shortwave Clubs International. In fact, two, because they've come up with updates of their specialist range of publications. Both are compiled by Finn Kroner, well known in this part of the world for his media news, broadcast each Sunday via Adventist World Radio. One of them is called Home Service Stations Outside the Tropical Bands. In other words, broadcasting stations that are serving an audience in their own country via shortwave. Starting at 5900 kHz, 23 pages later, you arrive at 16433 kHz, sometimes used by Radio Kiribati in the Pacific. It's clearly the best list of its kind, simply because it's the only list like it. The last check on the text was made in early May, just before it went to the printers. And this type of station is quite often a challenge, since the broadcasters here usually only have low-power signals and are often drowned out by powerful international broadcasters. The price for that publication is 8 international reply coupons by airmail. The title again, Home Service Stations Outside the Tropical Bands. The other booklet lists clandestine stations in both frequency and time order. Again, it's extremely comprehensive, and the addresses in the back may be worth a try if you want to send reception reports to these often mysterious broadcasters. The list is now updated at least every 6 months. The price for the clandestine list is 5 international reply coupons, and the address for further information on the two publications is simply the Danish Shortwave Clubs International, DK2670, Greve Strand, that's Greve, new word, Strand, Greve Strand in Denmark.
Yeah, Jonathan, I'm still looking at the paper here, and I have to just read you this little item. It says here that Italian children have launched a campaign against state and private television. The children claim that the Italian president should intervene in what they call the degrading use of children's show nude to boost sales of consumer goods.
Incredible. Well, we're off to Angola now, not literally, but on Monday, the MPLA government in Luanda released a claim that its forces had overrun a rebel radio station run by UNITA, although they didn't specify the location. Our correspondent in southern Africa, Richard Jinby, says it doesn't seem to be the main station, believed to be located in Jamba, because the broadcast on 9495 kHz by UNITA between 11 and 1250 UTC is still on the air. There may be, of course, more than one station, and one of the regional UNITA stations could be the one involved. Now over to Carl Josephs on tape.
Few listeners to BBC's domestic radio service, Radio 4, on 200 kHz longwave, are aware that the same transmitter is used to send coded messages to electric time switches right across Britain. Data signals are added by phase modulating the main carrier of the transmitters. Small, cheap longwave receivers are installed near to the electricity meter in the consumer's premises. When the correct code is broadcast by the transmitter, appliances such as storage radiators or water heaters can be switched on and off to take advantage of off-peak cheap electricity rates. This allows the electricity supply industry more flexibility to smooth peak electricity demands. Queen Elizabeth recently gave an award to the BBC engineering department who came up with the idea earlier this decade. Now, the same department has begun test transmissions of the new European radio data system from an FM transmitter in Sutton Coldfield. Suitably equipped radios can then receive station name, programme and possible traffic information displayed on the front of the set or spoken by a voice chip. The normal radio programme is received as usual and is unaffected by the digital data. The system is also currently being tested in Holland, Sweden and West Germany.
Well, if we get through customs, I'll be back with a fairly normal media network in 7 days' time. Now, all we have to do is to throw the newspapers away, thank Alan Smart and David Ward for their help with background research today, and get off this train. Bye. And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.